Forget the opinion polls. The first national verdict on the government since the general election will be announced on Sunday evening. And LBC will bring you the results as they happen. With reporters at every count in London, guests from the major parties in the studio, and analysis of the results from Bob Worcester, the LBC Euro election special will be first for the capital. That's Martin Young, this Sunday night, starting at 11 on LBC News Talk 97.3 FM.
Sport on the Steve Jones Breakfast Show.
And Mr. Ramage has the details.
Starting with rugby union and this morning's results. Ireland have been beaten 32-18 by Australia in Sydney in the second and final test. There are other big matches today. England face South Africa in the second and decisive test in Cape Town this afternoon. The tourist week has been marred by the explosive encounter in midweek against Eastern Province, in which Tim Rodber was sent off. He's avoided a ban, but England manager Jack Rowell says they'll need their strongest team against a Springboks side out to level the series.
Well, Africa will be on the rebound, and, you know, the religion of the rugby in this country will count for a lot, and the crowd will get behind them, and they'll give it a big try.
Wales are out for revenge against Canada in today's test in Toronto. The tourists go into the game fresh from a convincing 28-19 success against a Canadian second team in Hamilton earlier this week. Canada beat the Welsh in Cardiff when the two sides met last November. Ireland and Scotland are also playing internationals today. The Irish take on Australia in Sydney. The Scots face Argentina in Buenos Aires. Jeremy Bates is out of the Stella Artois Championships at Queen's Club, the British number one losing in straight sets in the quarterfinals. He beat Boris Becker early in the week and says that generally he's been satisfied with this week's work.
It's disappointing, but I mean, the week is a good week. You don't beat someone like Boris. I had three wins against three guys the first two rounds, who I've never beaten before, and I can only look back on the week favourably.
Speculations intensifying that Nigel Mansell will return to Formula One on a part-time basis. Austrian Gerhard Berger has given the strongest hint yet that the ex-world champion will soon be driving for Williams again. The Austrian believes it's only a matter of time before the financial arrangements are completed. Could be worth £1 million a race. Meanwhile, in Montreal, Jean Alesi in a Ferrari is in provisional pole position for tomorrow's Canadian Grand Prix. Back to the top story of the morning, and Bobby Charlton is among a host of sporting stars who've been honoured in the Queen's birthday list. Charlton's enjoyed success at every level of soccer and says his knighthood is above and beyond anything in football.
It's the nicest thing, the best thing that's ever happened to me, really. It's, like I say, you know, football's in your own hands, but when the country pats you on the back and says, you know, you've done all right, and it makes you feel pretty humble, really.
He's not alone. Sprinter John Regis, who won the 200 metres silver medal at last year's World Championships, has made an MBE. The athlete's been at the top of his sport for almost a decade, but insists this honour would beat winning Olympic gold.
I'm an athlete, and, you know, an Olympic medal is great, but to actually receive something from the Queen of England is, you know, you can't touch that. You cannot touch that. That's like the pinnacle. That is the mountain. You've climbed the mountain, and there she is, waiting to give you the medal, and it's just tremendous.
John Regis, MBE. Steve.
Thank you very much indeed, Ian. Thank you very much indeed, Ian. And I say again, thank you very much indeed, Ian. I've got a microphone now, which is always to one's benefit when broadcasting on the radio. Here's my mate's tips for today at York this afternoon. Two races he goes for, the 3:45, the William Hill Trophy Handicap, over 6 furlongs. Mary Hinge is the horse he has selected there. Make of that what you will. Mary Hinge with Paul Eddery on board. And in the 4:15, the Daniel Prenn Royal Yorkshire Handicap over a mile and a quarter. Athene, Walter Swinburne being the jockey in that particular instance. All right, it's 23 minutes to 10. Poetry with Brian Patton in about 6 minutes' time. Before that, something else.
This year, millions of people will have their hearing impaired and may suffer discomfort or even pain. The cause? Earwax. Now there's a new answer to problem earwax, Otex eardrops. New Otex is clinically proven to reduce the need for syringing. Its unique dual-action formula not only softens hardened earwax, but actually helps it fragment and disperse. Ask your pharmacist about new Otex. For clearer ears, there's been no better news in years.
Contains urea hydrogen peroxide. Always read the label.
These days, more and more people are investing in company stocks and shares. But what really happens to your money behind the boardroom door?
Ah, the motor car brochures. Yes, it's the 9-cylinder walnut and deerskin stretch for me in shareholder green. And for Gerald, the 73-valve turbo in metallic foie gras. For Miss Perkins, just the limo.
Read Investor's Chronicle every week. We'll give you the city inside out.
This is Peter Dealey. This Sunday morning at 10, up front and live. The top names open up to me and to you. Take time to listen and have your say. Up front and live on LBC News Talk 97.3.
This is the Steve Jones Breakfast Show.
And a wee question for you. What do the following have in common? Walking the dog, Eggs and Baker, The Survival Guide to Food, Bucks Fizz, Super Dogs, Record Breakers, and 07-1232-2255. Well, the telephone number, of course, is the registration number for the Strollathon on July the 17th this year. And one of our celebrity supporters is the young lady associated with all the aforementioned, Cheryl Baker, who joins us this morning. Good morning, dear.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you?
I'm all right, you know. I had to set my alarm to get up this morning to talk to you.
Did you really? Well, I had to set mine, but it was for about 3 o'clock. Not now.
Isn't it shocking?
Have you had your twins yet?
No, but that's the reason. I'm sleeping late in the morning because I have to get up so many times in the night for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I sleep late.
When is the big day then? Supposedly,
it's any day really.
It should be.
It should be the end of the month. But my doctor said, you know, expect a twinge any moment.
Right. Have you doing all the exercises?
Be prepared, Steve.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to have to rush off quickly.
Might happen now. Nurses, the screens and a kettle of hot water, please. So, have you been working at all during the latter stages of your pregnancy?
Yeah, I was working up until a few days ago on Record Breakers. We've been filming for that.
Mm-hmm.
On and off, you know. I mean, I was working solidly until a couple of months ago, but then little bits here and there. I'm not overdoing it, because I can't do very much. I can't walk far. I mean, I won't be doing a stroll-a-thon. I could do a roll-a-thon.
No, I know you're one of those offering support, which is nice. You couldn't possibly do it just so soon after having twins, that is for sure.
I would do it... I would do it if I could. I mean, so soon, yeah. It would be like a fortnight after I've had the babies, and I think, to be perfectly honest, I think I'm going to have my hands full, apart from, you know, other parts of my
anatomy. Yes, well, other parts are full at the moment. When we see the Record Breakers, the new series, of course, presumably you'll be wearing a smock of some sort then, will you?
Yeah, there'll be all the films that you'll see. You won't see that many films of me because of my condition. But the films that you do see, I'll be very varying shapes, depending on what time of the pregnancy they filmed me in. Actually, in the studio, of course. The studio starts in September, so I'll be back to normal.
Back to your normal
size. I never want to carry this much weight again. You know, I've put on nearly 4 stone.
Have you?
It's unbearable.
Well, I know, but it's what you wanted for so long, though, isn't it?
Oh, of course.
It's
taught me a lesson. I mean, you know, there's been times when I've put on a bit of weight and I think, oh, that's all right, I can carry this amount of weight. I won't ever do it again. I want to get fit. I want to be back fit and slim, because this 9 months has been 9 years. It's the longest pregnancy ever.
Well, I'm sure
every mother-to-be says the same.
Well, absolutely, yes, but not that many people have had twins, of course.
No.
Do you know as yet, because I know you've undergone all sorts of tests, do you know whether you've got two boys, a boy and a girl or whatever, to come?
No, I don't. They do know. They can see, apparently, now, with scans and everything, but we chose not to know, because it's like opening new Christmas presents before the day, isn't it?
Right.
I think, especially having waited so long, it'd be a shame not to wait just a little bit longer.
Right, have you come up with...
I honestly don't mind. I don't mind if it's two girls, two boys, or one of each.
I'm sure you don't mind at all. I mean, do you have a list of preferred names prepared?
Funnily enough, we have lots of girls' names and hardly any boys' names.
Steve is quite a nice name, isn't
Steve's a very nice name. Well, my husband's name's Steve, so I do have a preference for Steve.
Are you planning to do, I mean, I know you've got to get back to work as soon as you possibly can as well, and fit the family and work in at the same time. What about baby programmes? Are you tempted to go down that path?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no one's approached me, so they probably don't want me to, but yes, of course. And talking about, because they were both IVF, you know, talking about that, I think it's an opportunity to talk about things that other people are going to go through or possibly go through or are thinking about going through, you know, and it opens a few avenues for them, you know, they can see what happened to me, and I think it's a good opportunity for me.
That's right. Well, of course, as you said, you've had the in vitro fertilisation, which you're not an older mother, though. I mean, you're still of proper childbearing age.
No, I'm an older mother. You're classed as an older mother if you're over 35.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
But 40 doesn't beckon yet, you see, and there are women...
No, 40's here. I'm 40.
Are you?
Oh, yes. All right. Well, 40.
Well, thank you for admitting that. Cheryl Baker's 40, everybody. Did you know that? I thought she was about 28.
The trouble is, you see, being pregnant and 40, it didn't help because I couldn't celebrate it because I couldn't drink.
Not even a glass of Buck's Fizz,
even. I'll celebrate 41, I think.
Yeah, well, that's the way to do it. But there have been women this year who wanted babies in their 50s, even over 60, one of them in Italy, I think, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I presume you wouldn't have maybe gone that far, would you?
Well, I think if you can physically have children, when I say physically, I mean, the reason I didn't was because I have got blocked fallopian tubes.
Hmm.
But if you're still producing eggs, then you're still of childbearing age.
Yeah.
Then I think there's no reason not to. My mother was 40 when she had me, and she was 46 when she had my younger brother. So she was still of childbearing age. If you're not producing eggs anymore, if your body's actually stopped working as, you know, in the reproduction sense, then I don't think, really, morally, you should have children.
Mm. So you've got it all worked out.
That's what I think. Maybe that's a bit controversial, but I think if your body can do it, then fine. If it can't, then I think you're playing with nature too much.
Yep, nothing wrong with a spot of controversy at around 9:45 in the morning, which, as you say, which is
a weekend, though. It should be a weekend. But it's a beautiful day, isn't it?
It's a gorgeous day, yes, absolutely. So maybe you'll take a wee stroll out, you know, a little bit of exercise.
I do stroll.
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to stroll for 10 miles.
No.
But I walked yesterday in Greenwich Park, and it was I really enjoyed it.
Right, well, no doubt we, or whatever we're called this time next year, will be behind Strollathon 95, so the twins then will be just about of an age to come out in the buggy with you at
yes.
that time.
I did a smaller Strollathon a few years ago. It's a 4-mile one, and I thought, oh, that's a long way. But it really isn't. And once you're on the walk and you're talking to people, and you are walking, you're not jogging, you're not sort of exerting yourself too much, it's especially if it's a nice day, it's a really enjoyable way of raising money for charity.
Absolutely
it's
right.
It's dead easy.
Sure it is. Well, thank you for joining us this morning, and we look forward to the forthcoming birth. Ring us up from the bed and let us know when they've arrived.
Steve, I can promise you, you'll be the last person on my mind.
I'm sure that's so. No, the other Steve is number one. Cheryl, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheryl Baker there, supporting the Strollathon in 94 and maybe pushing the babies in 95. Don't forget, 232-2255 is the number to register, 071 in front of that if you find it necessary. In a moment, a spot of poesy with Brian Patton.
For over 20 years, LBC has been the best and fastest news service for London.
A relatively short road has got about 8 large trees which have just crashed across.
Relive 20 years of LBC with a special double cassette. Available now for £8.99, including post and packing. Stocks are limited, so apply today. Send your cheque, made payable to London Radio Services Limited, to LBC Cassette Offer, 72 Hammersmith Road, London, W14 8YE, and buy yourself a piece of radio history.
This is the Steve Jones Breakfast Show.
Well, Liverpool comes to London 1994, reads the banner headline of a press release I received at the beginning of May. Not for a cup final, mind you. Those days seem to have disappeared in the mists, but for a series of cultural visits to the Waterman's Arts Centre in Brentford. Music, theatre and poetry all playing a part. Now, there's been plenty of new talent on display, but tonight, Adrian Henry, Roger McGough and Brian Patton, who established themselves as performance poets way back in the 60s, will reconvene at 7:30 for a rare outing together. Brian Patton has just a short trip to make, for I believe he lives just around the corner from here, or at least he did back in 1988. Anyway, Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Maybe a wandering poet moves on from Brook Green, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm still living there.
You're still around there, right?
I can hear you from bed, yeah. Don't have to turn the radio on to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. A far cry from Sefton Park. Before we get into some of your current writing, were you regarded as something as a freak at school, having begun to write at age 14?
Well, yes, I was in the C stream all the way through. I was really bad at everything, and one day I wrote an essay, and the headmaster dragged me out of the C stream and put me in the A stream. And, I mean, God knows why, it was just an essay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you come upon poetry? I mean, at 14, not many young men are actually into poetry at that age.
I think the truth is, I mean, my background's... The family I grew up with, my family, were very inarticulate and very unhappy people. And I suppose, really, for me, poetry was a way of trying to articulate where I felt, because I was quite an isolated kid, really.
Right. Where did you come across the other two? How did you come across them as kindred spirits?
Oh, I met Roger and Adrian in a club when I was 15, a kind of drinking den in Liverpool that did poetry as well.
Which was more important?
I just got rid of my school cap and taken up other things. Yeah,
absolutely. Of course, I mean, well, I'm from that neck of the woods over the other side of the Mersey from Cheshire. One got the impression, even at that short distance, of course, that with the performance arts, from poetry through comedy through, of course, the beat boom in the 60s, that Liverpool really was the happening place, that it was all going on. I wonder how true that actually was.
Well, it was very true. I mean, it was a very small, still is a small city, and I think because of the city's size, in the clubs you'd have sportsmen, you'd have boxers, you'd have musicians, you'd have footballers and painters. You know, all the people in whatever activity were all in the same place. So there's a lot of interaction.
Now, you've got two new books of children's poetry, and I'll publish this coming autumn, but you're equally well known for love poetry and adult verse as well. Which comes easier to you?
I suppose the children's comes easier. The adult work's harder earned, in a way. But I love writing for children. I think of it as a kind of holiday from myself.
That's an interesting phrase, a holiday from yourself. I mean, because obviously the older one gets, the further one is away from one's own childhood. So do you delve back into your own experience, or is it...
I delve back into it, but also at times as a child that I never had. You know, also, I mean, in writing for children, you can be much more anarchic. And it's great fun, yeah.
It'd be irresponsible, even. Yeah?
Even irresponsible,
right.
Yeah.
Have you got something from the two new books with you this morning?
Well, I'll read one, a children's poem. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah, please.
Okay, and this is a little kid's letter to his mother, and he's been left alone in the house for the first time. Dear Mum, while you were out, a cup went and broke itself. A crack appeared in the blue vase your great-great-granddad brought back from China. Somehow, without me even turning on the tap, the sink mysteriously overflowed. A strange jam stain, about the size of a boy's hand, appeared on the kitchen wall. I don't think we'll ever discover exactly how the cat managed to turn on the washing machine, especially from the inside, or how Sis's pet rabbit went and mistook the waste disposal unit for a burrow. I was being good, honest, for I think the house is haunted. So, knowing you're going to have a fit, I've gone over to Gran's to lie low for a bit.
Now, is that from Utter Nutters or Impossible Parents?
No, it's from a different book. It's from one called Thawing Frozen Frogs.
Oh, right, OK. So these two new ones, as I say, coming out in the autumn. I love hearing you read your own stuff. I mean, I've heard you read it on LBC and other radio stations before. Is poetry better performed than read silently, do you
think?
Well,
some. I mean, when I write, I find there's certain poems which are very much written for the voice, and others which are written for the page. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got one here which was written for the voice, an adult one. Shall
right.
I
please,
give
yes,
it you?
Yes, please, if you would.
It's called Hair Today, No Hair Tomorrow. And that's H-A-I-R today, no H-E-R tomorrow. I've been upstairs, she said. Oh, yes, I said. I found a hair, she said. A hair, I said. In the bed, she said. From a head, I said. It's not mine, she said. Was it black? I said. It was, she said. I'll explain, I said. Swine, she said. Not quite, I said. I'm going, she said. Please don't, I said. I hate you, she said. You do, I said. Of course, she said. But why, I said. That black hair in the bed, she said. A pity, I said. Time for truth, she said. For confessions, I said. Me too, she said. You what? I said. Someone else, she said. Oh, dear, I said. So there, she said. Ah, well, I said. Guess who, she said. Don't say, I said. I will, she said. You would, I said. Your friend, she said. Oh, damn, I said. And his friend, she said. Him too, I said. And the rest, she said. Good God, I said. What's that, she said. What's what, I said. That noise, she said. Upstairs, I said. Yes, she said. The new cat, I said. A cat, she said. It's black, I said. Black, she said. Long-haired, I said. Oh, no, she said. Oh, yes, I said. Oh, damn, she said. Goodbye, I said. I lied, she said. You lied, I said. Of course, she said. About my friend, I said. Yes, she said. And the others, I said. Ugh, she said. How odd, I said. I'm forgiven, she said. Of course, I said. I'll stay, she said. Please don't, I said. But why, she said. I lied, I said. About what, she said. The new cat, I said. It's white, I said.
Oh, I'd love that. I mean, that is a whole relationship encapsulated there, isn't it?
Isn't it? Unfortunately, yes.
It is indeed. Well, I mean, you are inspired, I know, by life, by smells and all sorts of things, aren't you? You know?
Yeah, I really write out of what's around me. I'm not writing for, as you can tell by listening to those kind of things, I'm not writing for posterity. I write because I enjoy it. It's that simple. And also, I suppose it's a way of trying to articulate what I feel, you know. I mean, somehow by writing it's not just a therapy, because you try to shape the poem, you try to make it accessible, but basically you're writing out of your own experience, and it's not very literary. There's no literary references in it, really.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that some people therefore do write expressly for posterity, when they sit down and say, right, today I begin the novel which is going to be my masterwork, which people will be reading 100 years after my death?
I suppose a few people might do that, but they're the ones that never get the novel published, really. I don't think any book worthy of itself is written like that.
Mm. I mean, who are your own favourites from the present day and days gone by? I mean, are you a Betjeman man, for instance?
I like a lot of Betjeman. It's kind of, I always think of Betjeman as, it seems so lightweight, but if you pull back the tarpaulin, there's a lot of nasty, creepy things under it. He always did seem very lightweight, but I think underneath it there's a lot of pain and a lot of insight.
Yes. And again, not too much intellectualism in there either.
No, he wore a sort of cloak of lightness, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one must be, of course, a man approaching middle age or in early middle age or whatever these days, do you find that the subjects which attract you have differed and changed a great deal?
Well, yeah, I mean, here's a very short poem. Here's a poem, I suppose it would appeal to people approaching middle age. It's called My Creature Comforts. My creature comforts no longer comfort me. The truth is, they never did. It was always the thought of leaving them behind that was the luxury.
I love it, because you've got to think, haven't you? See, this is why, I mean, you said that some poems are written for performers, but a performance can be forgotten, and very quickly, too, which is why it's best to have them on the page as well, so that you can go back to them and remind yourself over and over again.
I suppose so. Going to readings, I suppose, it's like hearing a band, you know.
Mm.
You go back and you play the records as well.
Yep. Yeah. So tonight it is at the Waterman's Arts Centre, not just for Brian, but also for Adrian Henry and Roger McGough. 7:30 is the time. Do you actually, when you take the stage on these rare occasions, do you take it together and read alternately,
well,
or what?
We try very much to work together. I don't know what we'll be doing this evening, but often we try to... The poems gel. We've known each other for about 30 years, so... You know, we can share poems and we try to create a show out of the material.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for sharing those three poems this morning. I wish we had time for more, but sadly we don't,
right,
because the news approaches. But Brian Patton, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Well, I think that Brian Patton's muse has actually leapt onto my shoulder now, because now it's time to wend our way to the traffic centre and young John Kay.
Ah, it is indeed. Now, the A13, there seems to be a lot of traffic there at the junction with Prince Regent Lane. There are roadworks, and that's causing tailbacks in both directions between the Beckton flyover and the Canning Town flyover. Oxford Street is still closed temporarily. That's westbound from Oxford Circus to New Cavendish Street and eastbound to Hollis Street. So try and avoid the area for the time being if you can. And Bayswater Road has been closed as well near Edgware Road. That's because we had a car on fire earlier on. Marylebone Road at the junction with Baker Street. Roadworks there means it's down to one lane westbound. That's likely to go on until 1 o'clock this afternoon. And you'll find there are various roads closed around Horse Guards Parade. That's because Trooping the Colour is on. Also until 1 o'clock. Traffic lights, they're out of action in Edmonton on the A406 North Circular Road at the junction with Montague Road. And also you'll find that traffic lights have failed in Pimlico, where Ebury Bridge Road meets Pimlico Road. And on the tubes, no major problems. There's some engineering work on the eastern section of the Central Line.
Heavy traffic is expected at Ryman because of their new low prices on stationery and office machines. Beat the rush. Go now. Ryman, real value on your doorstep.
John Kay at the LBC Traffic Centre.
Well, I'm off to the Jubilee Gardens now on the South Bank to welcome the walkers who've been performing, doing stout stuff for the backup charity. They'll be getting there about midday. If you're in that neck of the woods, maybe look forward to seeing you down there. And we've got the Fix-It phone-in, of course, on LBC coming up after the news at 10 o'clock. And we're back tomorrow. The entire team will be here bringing you the bigger, brighter breakfast show for a Sunday morning between 7 and 10. And my star guest of the morning tomorrow will be Lindsay Duncan, GBH, the rector's wife, A Year in Provence, and of course a whole pile of great theatre work, and she'll be telling us about her new play and her life and times, plus everything else that you want to know for a Sunday morning. Until then, from me, Steve Jones, bye-bye.
By collecting the Great British Summer Tokens in the Daily Telegraph, you can get discounts on a whole range of the best attractions in your own backyard. Leisure centres, museums, castles, theme parks, national trust properties. In fact, you won't want to go abroad. No wonder some continental hoteliers are going round the twist. Oh dear.
The Great British Summer Offer in the Daily Telegraph starts this Saturday, June the 11th.
This is Peter Dealey. This Sunday morning at 10, up front and live. The top names open up to me and to you. Take time to listen and have your say. Up front and live on LBC News Talk 97.3.
LBC News Talk 97.3.